back now and see that my parents and I lived in a kind of mythic kingdom, that the place where my father went to work each morning was a factory of dreams, and that those friends and neighbors were some of the most talented and colorful individuals in the world. I was regarded as a prince in this surreal world of make-believe, but in many ways I was destined to be a pauper. My mother had been a star for many more years than my father when I was born. She was perhaps the most famous female dancer of her era. With a series of blockbuster movie musicals to her credit, she had been a star at MGM in the late 1930s and early 1940s, and you couldn't do better than be an MGM star in that period. But Mother had decided to put her career on hold when she married in 1943, and by the time I was born, only a year and a half later, she had largely faded from the spotlight and had come to identify herself almost entirely as a wife and mother. Now it was my father's time to shine, and she stepped aside. My mother was not much more than a child when she became famous. Dad was still a young man, 29 years old, when he hit it big in 1946. But he had experienced many nervous years of small breaks and middling success before then, and more than one person telling him he didn't have the right stuff for stardom. At the time he returned from service near the end of World War II, he had been seriously wondering if he would ever work in movies again. For my father, it had been a slow, unsteady climb to success. The man fated to become an all-American archetype was actually born at the Jeffrey Hale Hospital in Quebec City, Canada. He came into the world howling and healthy on May 1, 1916, and was named Gwillan Samuel Newton Ford. Newton for his father, Samuel for his mother's beloved stepdad, and the exotic-sounding first name, a variant of William, as a tribute to the clan's Welsh heritage. It should have been a day of great happiness and celebration, but the good news of Dad's birth was overwhelmed by shock and uncertainty. Just a day earlier, a horrific disaster had nearly consumed the family and ended the unborn baby's life before it began. The first call came at 1:45 a.m. while the family slept. A fierce fire had broken out in the small grocery store on the ground floor beneath their third-story apartment at 58 Palace Hill in Quebec City. It was a narrow, older building, and in minutes, the whole place was ablaze, thick black smoke filling the upstairs rooms and flames shooting up through the floorboards. Choking through the darkness, my grandfather had scrambled to save his pregnant wife, Hannah, and her adoptive mother, Carolyn Mitchell. Burned and blistered, they hung across the window ledge until arriving firemen could reach them with a ladder. As they descended, the ladder collapsed, and the three of them, along with Fireman W. Floyd, who was carrying pregnant Hannah, fell 20 feet to the ground. Carolyn was the most seriously injured in the fall. Hannah was terrified that her unborn child had been hurt. The women were rushed to the hospital, where Hannah immediately went into labor and gave birth to my dad. Carolyn remained for 105 more days, undergoing a painful recovery. That fire would never be forgotten by my grandmother. She had lifelong recurring nightmares of being trapped by a fire or losing her baby to the flames and smoke. The incident left her with intensely protective feelings toward her son, which affected their relationship throughout their entire lives. While it is normal for most mothers to take pride and joy in their children, I don't think Hannah, who would never have another child, ever took another breath without thoughts of her son foremost in her mind. She never wanted Gwillan to separate from her, and he promised her he never would. My father's ancestors were of British stock, English and Welsh. His parents were both Canadian-born, Hannah, the daughter of English immigrants, while my grandfather Newton's people had been in the Quebec region for more than 100 years. Newton's family had been paper manufacturers since the 16th century in Derbyshire, England. My great-great-grandfather Joseph came to Canada in 1850 as an 18-year-old stowaway, settling in the heavily wooded area of Portneuf, Quebec, along the St. Lawrence River. With some partners, and eventually joined by his father and 9 brothers, Joseph established a series of paper mills in the region and introduced hydraulic power to the industry. Small towns came into existence around the company mills. One of these was set in a glen along the banks of the St. Anne River, 4 miles from Portneuf, and was named in honor of the family, Glen Ford. This was where my grandfather Newton Ford was born on January 3, 1890. Newton might have stayed on with the family business in the forest, and that would likely have been the end of this story. But my grandfather had little interest in paper. He was swept up in the romance of train travel, and when he was old enough, he left the mills to work on the rails, eventually becoming an engineer on the Canadian Pacific Railroad, principally traveling the route between Quebec and Montreal. Pictures of Grandpa show a tall, handsome, determined